You are listening to Trail on Mountain Bike Radio.
Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of Trailcast on the Mountain Bike Radio Network. If you want to support Mountain Bike Radio, head over to the website at mountainbikeradio.com and look at becoming a member, or hit the shop over there and pick something up. Today, I'm going to talk about my favorite subject, risk management. And then I've got a little rant. But before we get started, I have to tell you why risk management is my favorite subject. It's because I'm not a lawyer, and this isn't legal advice. If you want to know how much, if any, of what I say applies to you, find a lawyer familiar with your local laws. They vary from state to state, and even county to county and city to city. If you can find a recreational law specialist, that's the way to go. Take what I'm about to tell you as broad strokes, more of a way to develop a mindset about risk management than any actual legal advice. The other thing that I recommend is that you be insured to build trails. Again, regulations vary with insurance, but if you're building at an IMBA chapter workday, odds are you're covered. If you're building on your own and you don't have insurance, then odds are you're not covered. The other way that you're covered is if you get lucky and get hired by somebody else to build trail. For instance, you work for a trail building company, not own one, that's altogether different. Or you work for Parks and Recreation, which I don't mean you cooperate with them. I mean you collect a check from them. At that point, the liability belongs to the entity holding the account that your check is drawn on, so it's a good deal if you can manage it. All of that said, it only matters if somebody else gets hurt and tries to sue you. Everything I'm about to talk about has the primary goal of helping people not get hurt to start with, and the secondary goal of keeping your butt covered as much as possible if somebody does get hurt. So, don't put unexpected features on your trail. What I mean is, don't build a trail, put a sign up that says it's a beginner loop, and have a 4-foot drop around a blind turn halfway through the trail. I'm a big fan of putting optional technical lines on trails where I can find them, but even then I use signs to clearly indicate that the optional line is more difficult. Speaking of what users can expect on your trails, if a trail is particularly challenging in some areas, use a qualifier. This is a feature at the beginning or the entrance of a trail that basically says, if you can't ride this, don't go down this trail. I've seen gap jumps that are clearly not rollable, 4-inch skinnies going up over a log in between two fence posts that are spaced out close enough to make your pinkies pucker up, and a wall ride over a fence, among other things, used as qualifiers. The goal, of course, is to let people determine whether or not they can ride said obstacles without hurting themselves. All of these advanced features are great, but make sure you have proper signage. In particular, anything that a user could conceivably consider unreasonable, put a sign up indicating that the hazard is there. Those are design considerations to my way of thinking, things that should really be addressed as the trail is built. One often overlooked risk management technique is maintenance. Although this applies to trails in general, it also applies to features in a more specific way. Let us look at trails first. I have a trail that was fine on a particularly fast downhill section for years. One day, after a good rainstorm, it was not fine. Instead, there was a large gully across the trail where no concentrated flow of water had ever existed before. The problem stemmed from road construction on a road that bordered the property where a new drainage had been created, and the flow, which was rather strong, crossed the trail. Fortunately, this new gully was noticed by a user approaching it climbing rather than descending, and word was passed along so that the trail could be temporarily closed and fixed in a suitable way before anybody got hurt. For features, I'd like to break this out into two kinds. One is a natural feature, rock or dirt, even a pile of logs. And the other is structures, anything constructed, hammered together, or screwed together. Structures need to be inspected frequently to check for soundness and for damage that may prevent proper function. Repairs that may be needed could be anything from a lip on a dirt jump that simply won't kick someone high enough to not case the landing, to a rotten or broken board on a bridge, or just a nail sticking up on a skinny. As frequently happens when structures more than a couple of years old freeze, the pressure from the freezing water in the wood will cause the nail to back out of the wood. So it's not just important to make these inspections, but it's also important to have a schedule to check by and a system that you use to examine things and to document that it's been done, possibly even using pictures. This can help ensure that if somebody does get hurt, you can make the assertion that you made reasonable efforts to ensure the safety of the trails and the structures through proper maintenance. Beyond that point, it really is the responsibility of the rider to examine the structures. I know we get out there and we ride and we don't think very often about looking at a particular feature on a trail and making sure that it hasn't changed, or that there's not a broken board, or this hasn't fallen apart, or that's not, you know, these things happen. And we don't really think about them very often. We usually don't do them, but that's the reality of the situation is we're supposed to check those things as riders. And if you, as a builder, have done due diligence on that, then not checking it and getting hurt will fall onto the rider. So keep that in mind. One other thing to think about is where people might get hurt and how emergency personnel would get to them. For instance, a piece of property I work on has a network of old logging roads on it. I have intentionally, or could have intentionally, closed these roads, but instead I kept them open. The municipality where this property is located has a side-by-side ATV equipped for wilderness rescue, and using these roads, they can get within about 100 feet of almost any point on the trail system. The roads see relatively little traffic, and they don't attract a whole lot of attention from trail users, so that's a good thing. But the advantages in reduced response times, should an emergency arise, could save lives. So you look at what you have available for access to the property you're working on. You see if there's a way that you can allow for faster or easier emergency access. That's also a leg up. Ultimately, that's going to be taken into account if somebody does get hurt, as part of, have you done everything that you can to eliminate, you know, the possibility of complications after something happens? So finally, I want to hit some outright liability issues with broad strokes. And I mean really broad strokes. Like, be aware this is sort of where legal precedence lies, but it doesn't mean it will get you off the hook, or even that there aren't laws contradicting some of this where you are. Basically, here it is. There are three types of users, and each type exposes you to their own level of liability. The highest liability users are called invitees. These are people who have been invited or paid for a ticket or a pass to ride. And you've got licensees, who are people who use trails because they have permission to. This is what the vast majority of trail users in parks and public lands are. Trespassers, then, are just that. They're people using trails on land where they don't have permission to be in the first place. So from greatest liability to least, that's how it lays out. If someone pays you to be able to ride your trails, or if the trail is invite only, you have a higher standard to live up to in terms of providing a safe environment. If a trail is simply open to the public, the expectation is limited to reasonable standards and expectations. Technically, you have no obligation whatever to trespassers. So with all of that said, I want to move on to my rant. I got some help with the rant to keep me reined in, so without further ado, let's get to it. So, it's kind of a dark day for outdoor recreation in the state of Tennessee, because we have a situation that's developed here where lands, public lands, that are managed by the Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency, henceforth to be called the TWRA, are going to be assessed a fee for recreational usage under certain circumstances. So we'll get into those circumstances, but I kind of want to cover the fact that as a historic last, I'm joined by a guest here today where we've just done some gravel grinding on the Cheatham Wildlife Management Area, the CWMA, which is about 20,000 acres of land. It's primarily wooded But it's got a good network of gravel roads on. It's a perfect place for gravel riding. Richard and I have been out there, and Richard, I think Richard is finished sending dirty pictures to his girlfriend at this point. Richard is here, and if you are an electric motorcycle racing fan, and you think, "Gosh, I've heard this guy's voice somewhere," this is also Richard of the ESBK podcast.
Yeah, ESBK Studios, and it was TTXGPOD before that.
There you go. And so joining me, Richard is a longtime mountain biker. He rides road bikes, cyclocross bikes. He rides gravel. And, he's one of these guys that basically he's a little bit like me. If he can get on a bike and do it, he's going to do it. He's going to enjoy himself. He doesn't get too uptight about it. And the other thing that he spends a lot of time doing is he's one of the guys that spends a significant amount of time contributing to some of the building processes that I go through in the area with mountain bike trails. So that's also greatly appreciated. Tip of the hat to Richard for that as well. Richard, this is with the second time I've dragged you out to the CWMA, the yep. first time for what went down as allegedly a gravel ride, the ride which may contain trace amounts of gravel, which admittedly, that was kind of we ended up riding through the middle of a field and crossing a creek. And
there was some dirt roads involved. You warned everyone you should bring your mountain bike, and somebody else decided, if it's just gravel grinding, I can bring my hybrid.
Right. And so there was a situation that involved a hybrid on some steep double
pine,
track.
Oh, needle, pine needle coated leaves. Oh, yeah.
It was kind of like riding a bike with, non-studded tires on it down an icy hill is how it went down in my mind. Anyway, today we stuck to the roads, and I think it's fair to say that you were unaware of the amount, the volume of gravel roadage available.
Yeah, we went cutaways, and there's these footpath traffic only signs, which you've talked to the ranger in charge.
Right.
And those are, if it doesn't have a motor, then it's footpath.
Right. Randy, okay. Randy Cromer is the CWMA manager, at least until the end of this year. He's retiring. And at one point he had indicated to me when I talked to him that if it didn't have a motor on it, it was foot traffic. And so if we wanted to go out there and ride, we could ride anywhere we wanted to out there. And that was a non-exclusive anywhere. That was, even to the fact I said, could we build mountain bike trails? And he said, we can't have anything to do with it, but if you get volunteer labor out there and y'all can do it, knock yourselves out. So everything is on the up and up, but these are, we're going to focus on not the 20,000 acres that I'd love to put mountain bike trails on, because there's some awesome elevation out there,
and it's 20,000 acres.
And it's 20,000 acres, and as I keep repeating myself, I could put in a 20-mile loop where you park and you get on a piece of single track and you ride 20 miles and end up back where you park. And at no point did you have to retrace anything or, ride within 5 feet of another piece of trail where there's somebody else riding. There's so much space out there. It would be a unique experience for Middle Tennessee because so many of our trails are on small plots of land. But here's the deal. The TWRA has, in their infinite wisdom, decided that in order to support in it, because let me be clear, the TWRA is not a state funded agency in Tennessee. Okay. So all of their funding comes through the sales of hunting licenses and stuff like that. It's not something that there's like a line item in the Tennessee budget for at all. So I get it. Look, fish food is expensive. Deer food is expensive. Taking care of all of this stuff, buying trucks for the rangers, all of it costs money and it has to be supported. and you know, okay, raise the license fees. But I mean, really, the license fees are, you know, I guess they've been on par with what they are for other states for hunting licenses and fishing licenses and stuff like that. But what we have come to is they've said we're going to put a high impact habitat conservation permit in place. And what that means is that if you want to get on TWRA managed land and you want to either ride a horse or operate an ATV or ride a bike, you have to buy one of these permits. Now, the permit fees are as follows. A resident permit, meaning if you live in the state of Tennessee, a resident permit for 1 year is $74. A resident day permit is $15.50. Hint, if you live in Tennessee and you're going to do this more than a couple of times a year, buy the annual fee. Non-resident permits, and this is where it gets a little bit crazy. Okay, non-resident day permit is $37.50. A non-resident annual permit is $233. So, this goes into effect July 1st, which means Wednesday. We're sitting here. It is June the 28th, Sunday afternoon. We've just finished our Sunday afternoon ride, which we did it on gravel because we got some rain here. Normally we'd be on trails somewhere, but that didn't work out today. But I mean, Richard, no, it's a great ride.
My mountain bike, my ProFlex is in pieces, and I got 3.5 miles and ripped a sidewall in my brand new Hutchison tubeless tire, which I have, I think, a total of 8 miles on now. So my road bike's down. We couldn't go road riding. The ProFlex is down. The GT is still waiting for parts someday. You know, but I got the Bianchi with the really nice Clement Explore MSOs on them. Right. And you've got the GT grade. Yes. So we went, let's go gravel grind.
Right. So, I mean, my grade is my road bike, which means basically if it doesn't involve single track, that's what I'm riding. If I'm on a gravel trail, if I'm on gravel roads, if I'm on paved roads, of course, the roads around me are allegedly paved. They purport to be paved on the map. In reality, they're more like large chunks of asphalt, kind of non-integrated.
Hey, those are quality roads where I'm from, bud. Hey, let me tell you, Mr. Man.
Southern Canada? I mean, Maine?
Oh, Southern Canada. That just never gets old.
Right. So, no, but I mean, it was a great ride. It was tremendous fun. But here's the problem.
We have to pay money to go do that. It's a bunch of freaking dirt roads.
And it's not just because up until today, I wasn't certain, to be honest with you, if, you know, are we going to be able to go ride on the roads? Is this just going to apply to, like, if there are actually mountain bike trails? No, sir. Ran into a ranger today, asked him. I said, sir, is this going to, you know, this high impact usage fee thing, if we want to come down here and ride bikes on the road, he said, you got to pay it. Let's count. Give me just a minute. Okay. We were passed while we were riding on the gravel road by a side-by-side ATV who spun out and did a little bit of a power slide as he passed us. He's really cool.
He did slow down. He didn't spin out till he got past.
Right. So. He was past. I mean, he wasn't being a complete jerk, but you know.
Yeah, but he was.
I think the demonstration is he spun out and did a power slide on the road after he passed us. You know, it's nobody's doing that on a bike yet.
We sure won't.
I'm not making that kind of wattage. So then we were passed by the Ranger truck. Wasn't there another like a full
there
size
was
Ford
two
in there somewhere?
Adventure motorcycles,
right? Two dirt, we'll call them dirt bikes.
They weren't dirt bikes. They're adventure bikes.
Adventure bikes.
That's a ADVs. That's a segment.
See, I'm glad you're here because they looked like dirt
they
bikes
had
to me.
And they had the brand new helmet, the adventure helmet, and the jacket, and the they had it all. And there was a Jeep Wrangler out there.
And the Jeep. So that's what we were passed by when we rode, what, 17 miles?
Almost 17, yeah.
17, call it 17 miles.
We'll call it 17,
we won't split hairs. It was 16 miles and enough change that we can honestly round up to 7. I remember math class. We can round up to 17. So that's what we're contending with. And we were on, what honestly, it's a cyclocross bike. The Bianchi.
Bianchi's an Axis, an old 2005 Axis cyclocross bike. Yep.
And then I was on the GT grade,
Enduro Road.
Yes. Enduro Road. Yeah. I sit there and make fun of it. I've been a bit notorious about making fun of GTs. I've had really good luck with GTs. This is my, third one. How is it that we as cyclists
you have 28C tires, I have 32C tires. We're both over 200 pounds, though. We might put some wear and tear on those roads, Drew.
But I mean, well, we I might know put we some, may- I don't know. We're being lumped into the same impact category as horses and ATVs.
Yeah, on road bikes, basically.
Yeah, basically on road bikes. And that irks me a little bit. I feel like that's a bad precedent. I feel like these guys maybe haven't read any of the studies in the last 15 years that demonstrate relatively conclusively that there's very little impact difference between riding a bike on a trail and hiking on a trail. And you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Richard, what's your take? Do you see a point of view from which...
I see an area that is rural. And so, like, you want to go out in your Jeep or on your dirt bike or your adventure bike or your 4x4 pickup truck, and these jerks in their Lycra get to go ride their bikes down that road and don't have to pay any fees, but I do. I see it just, hey, it's easier if we piss everyone off and make no one happy.
So, all right. Now that works for Cheatham County. Now I don't, look, I know that like 3 people listen to this podcast. I mean, that's the requisite number of listeners. I think Ben listens to it, and I'm pretty sure that when the big livers get loaded, they listen to it and laugh. I think they're laughing at me though. But if you don't know about Cheatham County, Tennessee, if you go to Nashville, you have counties all around Nashville that are very urban and very built up, except for to the northwest of Nashville, you have Cheatham County. And Cheatham County is, it's rural, mm-hmm. It's backwards. And honestly, I mean, there are people who have lived miles from the Cheatham County line all of their life, and they've heard these horror stories, like they're going to cross the county line and they're going to hear banjos playing and somebody's going to go squeal like a pig, boy.
Well, but in defense, I'm from Maine. I've lived other places. There's places like that everywhere. So it's not just, Cheatham County, I have no idea. I have no preconceptions about Cheatham County because I come from out of state. So it's just a place.
I could sing you the fight song from the local school.
Let's not.
Okay.
Is this this? Hopefully this isn't the county. Somebody was just telling me that it doesn't have a music program. I want to be a music teacher to the audience. At large here.
Richard is a jazz musician.
That's pushing it.
Well, that's like saying I'm a bass player.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay?
I mean, I let's be fair. I play bass. Richard plays clarinet. He plays clarinet better than I play bass, for the record, just in case y'all are wondering. No, and you're absolutely correct. There are other places, but here's the thing is like we have thus far focused on the Cheatham Wildlife Management Area, but there are TWRA managed lands all over the state of Tennessee,
yeah.
To include a relatively significant trail system to the Memphis, Tennessee area, which is, I mean, it's Memphis, but it's not, I mean, Memphis isn't backwoods. I'm kind of scared to go to Memphis, but they have the Herb Parsons Trail System down there. The Mid-South Trails Association is a big steward of that. They're an EMBA-affiliated club, and they've been responsible over the years for basically rescuing that trail system from neglect. I think it was the story is it was originally it was built by an equestrian group. It was abandoned. They went down there and kind of excavated the remains of the trail system and built it back up. And I've never ridden Herb Parsons, but I hear it's a good place to ride. And I hear that it's a, you know, a real linchpin in the Memphis area. And that is a TWRA managed land. And there are others. I believe the Urban Wilderness. I got to stop and kind of qualify a bunch of things here. This is a big deal to a very small number of people, and I have sent more emails to more people trying to find out more information about this. Nobody wants to talk about it. I sent 3 emails to the TWRA just trying to get the answer that I got. Just one of the reasons we went up there today is I wanted to see if I could get hold of a ranger and actually ask face-to-face if this fee applies to going up there and riding on the gravel roads, because I couldn't get an answer. Well, not a straight answer. I couldn't get an answer.
Okay. Now, what I just thought of is, what if it's a ranger thing? What if it's like, well, we really don't care if bicycles ride on it because they're not going to tear stuff up, but it depends on how strict the rangers want to be. So we don't want to officially say that or say anything. Maybe we'll just go and ask the rangers, and if those rangers are cool, they're cool. If they're not, they're not.
Well, you know, that's kind of like... to my mind, that's a little bit like riding the super secret trail. You know, why is it super secret? Well, it's super secret because technically it's not supposed to exist. You know, you can elect to go ride the super secret trail and keep your mouth shut. And somebody might show up or somebody might not show up, and you may or may not get a ticket. Or you can go ride a legitimate trail. And in the same sort of way, you know, if you're going to be on a TWRA property, you can go buy this permit or you can take a chance. Now, I got to say this. It seems to me, I've read this. Yes, here it is. Anyone who possesses the necessary licenses and permits to hunt on designated wildlife management areas are exempted from the requirements to possess high impact habitat conservation permits, which means, since, you know, generally I buy a big game license and a Type 93 permit, which is what you need to hunt on the wildlife management. It has other benefits in the state of Tennessee. Let me be clear. I'm a little bit gun shy about being around a bunch of people whose goal it is to shoot something in the woods. And so I don't go on WMAs and hunt, but the Type 93 permit does more than just give you permission to hunt there. It increases the number of antlerless deer that you can shoot anywhere, using a big game license. So I generally have one. So technically I wouldn't have to buy this permit, but anybody who doesn't hunt, you know, this is an additional fee that they have to pay. So we're looking as I was saying, there are other lands, and I'm not clear on some of this, but I believe that the Knoxville Urban Wilderness Area, which is a park, and urban wilderness, it's a large tract of wilderness area in the Knoxville area. And the reason that that may sound vaguely familiar is because the plan to build a downhill trail in the Knoxville area that recently won the Bell Built $100,000 IMBA grant is slated to be in the urban wilderness there. I'm not sure, because I can't get people to answer my emails, that is also a TWRA managed property. So let's spend $100,000 to build a downhill trail that, you know, okay, the locals have to pay $74 a year. And if you're from out of state, let's say you're over in North Carolina. If you were in North Carolina, I'm not sure why you'd come to Tennessee to ride. Y'all got so many great trails. But let's say you wanted to come ride this, and you were going to do it quite a bit, you know, well, you'd have to do it quite a bit to go from the $37.50 high impact fee, the day permit, to the annual permit at $233. I don't know who's going to go for that, but this looks to me like it's going to push more people off of these properties than it's going to bring in.
Well, and the other thing I was just thinking was this money that the mountain bikers have to pay to I got another thought too, but say that the mountain bikers do have to pay this $74 a year to go ride this thing, or the $15 a day if you're in state. None of that money goes towards trail maintenance.
Right. To be clear,
it goes towards feeding deer and fish.
And right. And that's been a big rub with the Mid-South Trails Association guys, is they're not getting any money from the TWRA for that. All of the maintenance on those trails, all of the fees, all of the lumber to build bridges, all of every cost and labor cost, monetary cost, time investment that goes along with those trails, all belongs to the Mid-South Trails Association and not to the TWRA. So it's not like this is slated to go towards making the parking lot nicer, or, you know, putting in some bathrooms and maybe some bike washing areas. None of that's going to happen. Let's be clear. Based on the way this is written, all of this is to cover the increased operating cost of the TWRA, which has got nothing to do with any of these trails and won't have anything to do with any of these trails. It's all going to go towards the vehicles. They have to buy boats, keep fuel in the boats, because they regulate the fishing. They check hunting licenses. Okay, it's a large complex operation, but you're asking for low impact. And here's the rub. Now, it would be different if there was also some sort of fee associated with all of the bird watchers and the hikers that also uses it. I'm not trying to get at the risk of inciting the ire of these folks. I'm not trying to get those folks charged fees. I don't think they should be charged high impact fees. It's not a high impact thing.
I might try to.
You and I'll talk about that later. The point is that it's not a high impact activity, and we're not displacing enough gravel from the road or driving enough gravel into the mud holes in the roads to warrant any additional maintenance based on the wear and tear put on the roads by riding bikes out there. And then the trails, I mean, they don't do anything with, I mean, they put a load of gravel on the roads. They might blade the roads once a year, but they don't do anything with the trails. So, I'm kind of at a loss. I look at the whole thing and I go, I understand the purpose that it serves. I don't understand the logic behind it, because
it really sounds like they're trying to get these, like the vehicles are in Cranston today, the side-by-side, the Jeep, the 8, the adventure bikes. You know, none of those guys were going blazing fast. The side by side was a little, I think that was grandpa showing off to grandson. I think that's what that was, but
it could be.
Yeah, but none of I mean, they weren't being unruly. They were kind. They waved, you know, especially the adventure bikes and the Jeep guy.
You're right, right, right.
The Rangers just seemed annoyed because they caught us on a hill, but going up it. But it really sounds like they're trying to get all that traffic off, because maybe in other areas people are being, because, you know, Jeep people are so reserved once they get into mud holes and stuff. I mean, I don't know if they're just like, we don't need this nonsense anymore. Go do it somewhere else, not on our land. Sure, throw the mountain bikers off too.
Well,
unless they want to pay, and then they can do whatever they want.
Right. So the interesting thing about that is that I'm only aware of two trails in the state of Tennessee that are actually mountain bike trail systems that are affected by this. So you got two areas where you're ostensibly going to get something out of this. That is, assuming that all of the mountain bikers don't run off and ride somewhere else. And then, you know, everywhere else, I've talked about putting trails up here. I've talked to the manager on the CWMA, but it's not happened because, frankly,
manpower, isn't it?
Well, it's, yes, manpower. That's the big holdup, is in this area, we can't get the manpower investment. And part of the reason for that is there's 5 months out of the year, during big game season, when you wouldn't be able to ride on these trails. And, I like to mitigate that by saying, you know, 2.5 months of that is time when the soil conditions in Middle Tennessee really don't allow you to get on the trails anyway. So in reality, you're actually not losing that much. The swing for the upside of that is, you know, if people don't go out there and ride because there's a really good chance you could get shot, that's a pretty good deterrent. Then maybe we wouldn't have so many people on the trails when they shouldn't be. And that would actually reduce our maintenance investment in those trails.
So what you're looking at is 5 months of the year you can't ride. So that's 7 months of the year you can ride on the trails.
That's what
it costs you. $74. I pay less than that for my Netflix subscription.
Ouch.
I'm just saying.
See, and so it was a tough sell. It was a tough sell before. It was a tough sell when it was free. Now that it's going to cost you $74, $7.40. No, I mean, $10 and whatever it is. It's in excess of $10 per usable month, right? We are now well and truly into the realm of it's never going to happen at this point. Now, all of that said, the Mid-South Trails Association, shout out to those guys. They've been on point with this the whole time. You can hit their website up at www.midsouthtrails.com. These guys have been on point the whole time. You want to talk about an organization that has been professional, involved, intent on sorting out this unbearable pile of malarkey. I'm going to call it what it is. These guys have, they posted form letters to send to representatives. They have been in contact with the governor. And all of this has been done, everything that I've seen, in the most polite, professional, insightful manner that you couldn't ask for a more professional group addressing this. And let me show you what happens when you address something like this professionally. There has now been this, mind you, goes into effect July 1st of 2015. There has been a 1 year delay put on assessing this fee, this permit fee, for the Herb Parsons Trail System. And that is a win. That's fantastic. But they've gone a step further. They're going to use the ensuing year to reevaluate the inclusion of bicycles in this high impact category. So at the end of the year, what might happen is, and even if it only happens at Herb Parsons, it's still at least a half a win if they say, okay, y'all don't actually have to do this, we're kidding. It would be a full-on, you know, like day at the park, somebody open a keg win if this applied statewide, if they decided, you know what, maybe bikes don't belong in this high impact thing. That would be a full on win. And that's what's going on. That's where we are right now. That's the latest update as of the 22nd of June. So, you know, the latest and the greatest, but the postponement of that, like I said, that's a win. But as of right now, you know, we've just done what I feel like was I feel like we had an awesome ride in spite of a mechanical issue at mile 8. we had a good ride.
It was a pinch flat though.
It was, admittedly, we got to a hill. There was a little rocky wash in the road. You were seeing red. You know, these things happen. But you know, we explored 17 miles of road, and there's more out there. You know, and I, having ridden those sections that we rode today, I would be disappointed to not be able to go back out there and ride that. I mean, I'm going to get a hunting license so I can go out there and do it. But, you know, Richard, I'm looking at him. I don't see him getting a hunting license. And he's shaking his head. And
I went hunting once. Chris, if I go hunting, it's going to be bow hunting. I'm going to give the poor animals a fighting chance. I'm not going to sniper them from 200 yards away with a scope. That doesn't seem right. And I don't have a freezer big enough for deer meat anyway, so
I do.
Yeah, well, it's true.
but here's the thing. It seems like
it's much easier just to come eat your deer meat than it is to go out and kill my elk.
Well, I mean, hey, and admit it, not everybody smokes as good a hindquarter as I do.
No, that's true.
So it seems like a tragic waste, though, of a natural resource of available public lands to have this fee in place to that you got to pay to go out there and ride. Now, I might be overreacting. If I'm overreacting, you need to let me know. You, all three of you that are listening to this podcast, should
I know the pain, man. I know the pain.
Should definitely send me emails. It's trailcast@mountainbikeradio.com. If I'm, you know, I could be overreacting.
I think the thing we need to take away from this is here's an organization that's just trying to do what they think is right for whatever reason. They think they came up with a reasonable thing.
Which organization is that?
The TW.
RA.
RA, yeah.
They're trying to do what they think is right.
Well, I just making a blank statement. That's all. I mean, okay. They've got fees to cover, costs to cover. They're just trying, you know. So they've included bikes in there thinking, you know, this will cover us. This will be the least amount of hassle. You know, nobody will be up in arms because bicycles get to be out there. They're probably not even thinking about it. They're like, bicycles, we see like two a year. It's these two tall, goofy looking dudes come out like, once or twice a year, you know, so at least at Cheatham County, I don't know about everywhere else, but clearly down in Memphis, you know, and if it's a rough neighborhood, as you're saying, then these are probably some real rough mountain bikers. And they probably went, hey, nah, this ain't happening. No, they're probably very polite, but they were the squeaky wheel. They said, no, this ain't cool. This seriously impacts us. And we've got a lot invested in these trails. And talk to them, and they're like, you know, there's a reasonable response. So, you know,
it is a reasonable response. And that's one of the things I want to stress is I think the response to it has at the last minute become reasonable. There's a reasonable discussion taking place. I've been very polite in all of my emails. It's been frustrating to me to send emails to various organizations and not get anything back. The guys at Mid-South Trails have consistently kept me in the loop with what's going on. They've been absolutely, again, top-notch. Here's the thing. I think that this needs to be reconsidered because, you know, my next opportunity for gravel roads is three counties south.
Fort Campbell.
Fort Campbell.
Yeah.
Fort Campbell.
It's not hard, man.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have a friend that lived on Fort Campbell that I went to visit fairly frequently. But I understand that
we're not actually going on base, though. It's the back 40.
Right. The back 40. And you don't have to go through the security checkpoints. But, no. You know, previously, in fact, certain people at Fort Campbell had asked me at one point to help convert an old obstacle course up there into a mountain bike trail. And there was a relatively high amount of enthusiasm for it. But even though the powers that be were involved in it, it was still kind of supposed to be an under the table thing. And I said, look, if you get me a pass so that I can just drive through the gate, I'm in. But if I have to stop and have people looking, you know, what are all of these? This is a strange looking thing right here. What is this? I use that to pull up trees. What are you pulling up? I didn't want to go through security. And so I told him, I said, if you can't get me a pass, I'm not in. I'm not doing it because I'm not going to get out and go in and sign in. And, you know, if building the trail is not officially happening enough to get me a pass for it, what am I going to do? I don't have a set of golf clubs I can throw in the back and see, I'm going to go play golf with the general. Huh?
Yeah.
You know, so, I'm kind of about Fort Campbell. We got a lot of guys, good guys that are on Fort Campbell that come ride with us, that come help us with trails up here. But that's completely different from getting onto Fort Campbell and doing something.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I mean, the whole area is massive. When they say back 40, they mean like 40,000 acres or something. But the actual base itself is secure. You have to have a military ID to get on or a pass, and they're going to inspect your car whether you've got a military ID or not. But, beyond on the outside of the perimeter, there's miles and miles of regular road and dirt roads and jeep trails and stuff for them to train and
bomb ranges and artillery ranges.
Yeah, there is the whole bomb and artillery ranges thing. Yeah,
shout out to my boy Anthony.
Oh.
who ended up on the wrong side of a bomb range sign. Well, I mean, there wasn't a bomb range sign there, was there?
I don't remember what he did. He did something. There was a sign they put up. I mean, obviously they secure the area somehow and put up warning signs and have people posted.
There was nobody posted, and he ended up on a bomb range on a cyclocross bike. And that was a bad situation all the way around.
That Anthony written all over it.
There's Fort Campbell, and there's a pretty good selection, a pretty good group that rides down, like I said, three counties south of us, Hickman County. And I'm actually looking forward to going down and riding with those guys some, on at least some of their shorter rides. I don't know if I'm up for their 100-milers, but, that's pretty serious for me. I'm good with 30 or 40 miles and, put a fork in me. So, but look, here's the upshot of the whole thing. This conversation is ongoing right now. It's happening. And this is an example of a club that's done it right.
Yeah. Compromise is available. There is, you know.
Absolutely. You know, there are other places that we can point to where they're trying to do it right. I point again to one of the earlier episodes, White Clouds, Boulder, White Clouds area. They're still trying to push that wilderness bill through out there, and they're still fighting that and trying to keep that area which is a beautiful place to mountain bike as a place that's accessible by bike. So that's one that's ongoing. You guys can still lend some support to that. You guys can get online, check out the Boulder White Cloud Conservancy website, check the show notes. I'll put a link to it in there. I haven't looked it up right now.
That is still going on.
That is still going on. They're still trying to push that wilderness bill through. And, you know, of course the mountain bikers don't want it. And, now you've got, an area out there that somebody had mineral rights to before it was, to a wilderness area, before it was designated a wilderness area. And, they're gonna let them run heavy equipment through it and build a road to, develop a proof of mineral out there so that they can actually mine it. But they won't let bikes into wilderness areas. So we could go on with this kind of lunacy. But, you know, again, it's the point, guys. It's an opportunity to be professional, to be courteous, and to potentially have an impact on a situation like this where the reality of the situation is there are people out there who could lose cycling access to some very valuable resources, you know, much more than, you know, the measly 20,000 acres that have some gravel roads on it that I'm talking about right out here by me. You know, it's a big deal to me, but it's basically nothing compared to situations like that. It's an opportunity to get on point, to do it right. And that's what I want to focus on. I'd like to take that as a positive away from the whole thing, is that this whole situation, it is approachable. And, so that's kind of where I am. Richard, you?
No, that's what I'm taking away, is that they made rules. I'm sure the mountain bikes, the bicycles were thrown in because it looked easier. But once the mountain bike group spoke up and went, whoa, 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 you know, they spoke up and said, look, they were like, yeah, okay, well, let's take a look at this. So that's a good sign. That's compared to the old days.
Yeah.
The dark ages, when I read articles constantly in Mountain Bike Magazine about this trail's now been closed and this trail's now been closed and this area's been closed off. And so.
All right. Well, hey, this is going to be like a record long episode, and so I'm going to move on. Now, one thing that didn't come up in my talk with Richard is how a usage fee on TWRA lands might affect TWRA's ability, liability, and the expectations of users. If you recall the last bit about liability, when I was talking about user types, it's very possible that riders paying an impact fee will fall into the category of invitees, thus posing a higher liability to risk to the TWRA should someone be injured. If you want to get in on the conversation, you can go to Facebook and check out the Trailcast page at www.facebook.com/trailcastpodcast. You can also follow along with what I'm doing on Twitter by following at Catharius, that's CotharyuS, and on Instagram using that same name, Catharius. I want to thank Ben at Mountain Bike Radio for giving me a forum for this podcast. Head over to mountainbikeradio.com and support them. There are some new options there to support it. So go over there and check out the support page. Check out some of the other shows. Remember, you can get the shows through Stitcher. You can download the Mountain Bike Radio app from the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store, or you can just grab the podcast through iTunes. If you like it, hit the rating section on any of those features there on iTunes or the Google Play Store, give it a review. If you review it, you know, if you like it, give it a positive review, not to stroke our egos, but because if you give it a positive review, it kind of gives it a bump. It makes it easier for other people to find. And, you know, share the love. Hey, if you like it, the odds are there's somebody else out there who mountain bikes who's also going to like it. So we appreciate that. And that's it for episode 8 of Trailcast. Thank you for listening. And remember, you don't need mountains to mountain bike, but you do need trails.